Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to Surf Splendor. I am your host, David Scales. Thank you for tuning in. If you are new to the show, welcome. All past episodes are archived for free. I think there's 35 or so, and they run about an hour in length. And we have interviews with a lot of important and influential people within the surf industry, publishers, shapers, surfers, a little bit of everything. And you can find those all on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com, or in iTunes and Stitcher. If you listen to this show in iTunes or Stitcher, if you could do us a favor and simply leave a review with your thoughts on the show and rate it, that just helps other people to find the show and helps our ranking with iTunes and with Stitcher. So that would be much appreciated, and we really don't advertise in any way. The show doesn't have any revenue stream, so we don't advertise, but that's your way to kind of invest into the future of the show, is to do that and then simply share it with friends. And the more this show grows, the more interviews we will be able to do, the more episodes we will be able to produce, the more kind of interesting and important people in the surf world will be interested in participating in the show and be interviewed and that sort of thing. So thank you for all your help in growing the show, and thanks for listening. Today's show is an episode of Surf News with my co-host, Scott Bass. So I hope that you enjoy it. I will be back at the end of the show to sign us out. So enjoy today's show. Thanks.
This is the worst intro song ever. Down the line, Surf Talk Radio and the Surf Splendor podcast, Surf News with Scott Bass and David Lee Scales. And it's April 29th. It's a Tuesday. And David, we've done really well about staying on our every 2 week schedule. And we hope that the listeners appreciate our lack of sloth.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that. But I think we started it at the beginning of this year. And we're already at the end of April. That's a solid 4 months, 8 episodes, I guess.
Wow.
Wow. Amazing.
We just jinxed ourselves.
Yeah.
We'll be back in 3 months.
Right.
No, just kidding.
Well, you got the boardroom show coming up, actually. That'll interfere, maybe.
Maybe.
That's in 2 weeks, right?
You probably will, unless you want to come down to San Diego.
I will be in San Diego for the boardroom show. And if you let me handle all the production kind of and prep, we can host a show from the boardroom show.
That would be insane.
I'll do all the work. You just have to show up for the 1 hour and get her done.
All right. Well,
you down? Co-host?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Let's do that.
All right.
Done. Keep on track.
A show from the boardroom. Mm-hmm. Dude, there is some crazy stuff. There's some crazy new potentially groundbreaking surfboard stuff. That's
holy crap.
That's going to be at the show. I just found out about yesterday.
Actually. Are you allowed to talk about it?
I'm not. In fact, I told him not to even tell me about it because I didn't want to know about it, you know?
Who's they?
I don't know if I should even
come
say
on. Thought I'd get you to slip.
I'll just say that there's a well-known surfboard manufacturer in San Diego, and he called me earlier, three days ago, and basically said, hey, you know, I just got the patent and all the legal stuff's all done, and we want to release this at your show.
Wow.
And I was like, cool. And
in between shaping surfboards for Josh Kerr?
No. 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 Maybe. But maybe not. No. But it should be,
okay.
And then there's a German engineer that's flying over from Germany with what he claims is some cutting edge, state of the art, groundbreaking, never seen before surfing leash.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's not the thing that I'm talking, although I'm sure that's going to be cool.
How do you, reinvent the wheel with that?
I don't know, you know. Virtue is the blog.
Okay.
Virtue. I haven't even looked at it, and I've just been so busy lately.
Yeah. Well, why don't you reset that topic, actually? What is the Boardroom Show?
Okay, well, the Boardroom Show is a international surfboard craftsman exposition open to the public. This will be our 14th show. Many of you know the show as Sacred Craft. And in fact, it basically is the same show. I just had to change the name for some legal reasons that I won't get into. But it's basically... surfboards and all things surf hard goods related. It's a show that if you love surfboards and you love surfing and you're a surfing enthusiast, you're going to love this show. Much like if you're, say, a boating enthusiast, you'd love a boat show. Well, if you're a surfing enthusiast, you'll love the surfboard show. And we're honoring Ben Ipa. Of course, Ben Ipa will be in town and be at the show both days, Saturday and Sunday, May 17th and 18th. And we've got six shapers lined up to replicate a classic IPA Sting. And we have a bunch of other exhibits, too. We've got the Chunk of Foam Challenge. And that's a competition or an exhibition, if you will, where we have four shapers lined up to attempt to replicate a classic Matt Biolas Lost Round Nose Fish, the 5'5", 19 and a quarter board, the original board that's in some of the videos that you may or may not be familiar with. But these four shapers will be replicating that board out of a chunk of foam and with only one power source, or one power tool, I should say, and no templates. They have to draw the template on by hand, and there's some other limitations as well. It's a really fun, engaging exhibition.
Yeah, a good test of their talent, too.
And that's just
in a day of shaping machines. It's like a throwback, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is. They don't get to measure the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can put the board under their arm and kind of fondle it and feel it for about 90 seconds.
But they don't even start with a blank. They start with a chunk of foam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a chunk of foam.
Crazy.
Yeah. And that'll be fun. And then, you know, we have an ongoing glassing, laminating demonstrations. We have a ukulele building demo, live music, food and beverage. And a bunch of, you know, state-of-the-art surfboards, and there'll be a best-in-show display, and we'll have awards for the best-in-show. And
I think it's just really cool, too, that everybody, a who's who of the industry attends. And a lot of them are exhibiting, but even if they're not exhibiting, you see famous surfboard shapers, surfers, designers there just milling around, and you have direct access to them, you know? So it's really kind of a cool event. Considering that a lot of our listeners are not in Southern California, you do it on the East Coast too, right?
Well, I have done it on the East Coast. I'm not doing one on the East Coast that I know of this year, although some people in New Jersey have been aggressively reaching out to me to maybe do one there.
Have you ever looked at the possibility of doing it elsewhere in the world, internationally?
Well, I have thought about it. You know, I think Japan would be a great place.
Yeah.
Japan does have a little bit of a show that's similar to this.
Oh, okay.
Australia has a show that's similar to this. I don't think they're all quite exactly like this, but I'm open to all of it. You know,
yeah.
It's just a lot of times it doesn't pencil out on a spreadsheet.
Yeah, you know? Totally. And logistically, it'd be a a lot more difficult considering you don't know all the people necessarily in those places, but seems like there would be a demand for it.
Yeah, I think so. The bottom line is that people are brought towards authentic, passionate craftsmanship, no matter what it is. And that's the reason we like really well-made furniture, and we like surfboards, and we like handmade. That's why we like art.
Yeah.
You know, we just like to see, I've talked to you about this before, David, we're so saturated with sort of slam bam, thank you ma'am, from Asia, plastic, for lack of a better phrase, Walmart stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fills our garages and our lives, and it's just, it lacks, without getting esoteric, I mean, it just lacks a certain spirituality, perhaps. That's being a little bit overboard, but you know, it lacks that handcrafted I give a damn vibe.
Right. Yeah, no, and you messaged me right before we came down here about that, the interview in my last episode with Steve Pesman from the Surfer's Journal.
Yeah, well, hold on. I heard such great things about that.
Okay.
I was in the water. Actually, I was surfing with David Price, who's one of our listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
And a really cool guy. And he said, yeah, did you hear Dave's interview with Pesman? And I said, no, but I know that Dave did a really good job. He always does. And I know that Pesman is an incredible interview.
Right. Well, that's in reference to board building. One of the things he was talking about was just like, I mean, there's no other, you can't think of another type of art or craftsmanship that has so many talented people pouring their life and soul into it, and it's still relatively inexpensive to purchase a unique one-of-a-kind piece. I mean, if you purchased a unique one-of-a-kind piece of art from any well-known artist, it's going to cost you more than $600, you know, the cost of a surfboard, or $800. And this is functional art. And they're undeniably, like, pound for pound, the most talented craftsmen out there in any medium of artistic expression. And so it's a really kind of weird, unique thing that we're participating in and have access to. And I don't know that it'll be that way forever. You know, I mean, we're still really on an early evolution of this process, you know, within the last 100 years, basically, whereas painting and that's, or sculpting, other types of art have been around much, much longer. And I'm sure that if you could go back in time and buy a Picasso, obviously, you know, or Van Gogh, you know, when he wasn't able to sell anything, you would in a heartbeat go back and do that. And that's made me think about how I purchase surfboards now. And it's like, these guys like Dick Brewer are still alive. Why would I not just invest $1,000 and buy one, you know, custom made for me?
Yeah, you bring up some great talking points. One is that's, you know, what you mentioned is really sort of the mission of the boardroom and has always been the mission of what I'm trying to do. And that's to, you know, lift up and sort of highlight these guys, because when I was a kid growing up as a surfer, these guys were always the guys that I was kind of in awe of and I was a little bit afraid of.
Right.
And they were a little bit salty and crusty. And just to get your foot in the door in the shaping bay was kind of a big deal, you know, to even
totally.
Go up to the factory. And I remember going up to the Channon factory as a 14-year-old kid and just, you know, just being stoked that they would come out and hang out with me in the parking lot and write mm-hmm. me up an order card, you know.
Right.
And I just feel like, you know, you're right. We need to, you know, pay a little bit of tribute to how neat these guys are and how important it is to our culture, to our surf culture. If that disappears and we replace it with just, you know, basically plastic ocean toys
right.
from mass manufactured, then we're doing a disservice to our culture.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's really in danger of happening. I think, you know, that market is there for the brand new people who are buying boards at Costco, basically, who are just weekend surfers or weekend surfers during the summer, probably. But the core group, I think, will always support the local shaper, I should hope.
Well, some of them, you know, not all of them, they still have to do their end, and that's marketing. You know, they have to be, these days, the really good guys are really good at marketing themselves and making themselves available to the average consumer.
Yeah, but the difference is that there is a difference in terms of functionality and quality between the local shaper produced board versus the mass produced pop out board.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've told you that I've been involved with wine, you know, for most all of my adult life. And there's a lot of parallels in that respect where it's like Kendall Jackson Chardonnay is available in every grocery store across the country. And it's consistent and each vintage tastes similar, even though the weather is different every...
Buttery with a hint of oak.
Exactly. And so people like that consistency that you can just go there. It's always the same price. It always tastes the same. But the reality is there's vintage variation every year. And a farmer is tending crops. And when you learn to appreciate that type of nuance of a farmer who's farming his own land, producing an expression of that land every year. And from a technical standpoint, one vintage might not be ideal, but you learn to appreciate the flaws because it's character in that wine. And you've had his wines year in and year out, and you've been to the vineyard, and you've hung out with his wife and kid, and you met the dog. And so whenever you open that bottle, you remember those things. And again, technically it's not as sound, but we don't care about technicality. If I just wanted to drink delicious beverages, I'd have Coca-Cola, you know?
Right.
I want an expression of somebody's labor and love. And so that's why I'm drinking this wine, is because I remember those things while I'm drinking it. And I think that surfboards are that, you know? And it's like you go and you talk to the shaper and you've seen him surf maybe, and you understand, you know how he understands the wave, and all of that is expressed through that chunk of foam, you know? And even though you don't necessarily, it's not a technically perfect board, you just enjoy it more. It has more sentiment, you know?
Yeah, you really put that in a fine little nutshell there.
And thanks. I like drinking.
I will not. Let me ask you this. Do the Kendall Jackson Chardonnay grapes, are they all grown on the same farm or chunk of land? Or do they co-op grapes from different regions of Napa? And some Joe Blow grape guy just sells his grapes to... And then how does it get buttery and...
Yeah.
And the same all the time. Is it a process? I mean...
Yeah. So it's option B, basically. It's not one farmer farming land. They have different levels of Chardonnay. So if you just buy the grocery store Chardonnay for $16...
I mean the Kendall one.
Right. But they have like a reserve.
Okay, right.
And at the top end of that spectrum, there is what they call a single vineyard version, which is from a single vineyard.
Right.
And so that'll be a little bit more higher. It'll be higher quality.
But the way they finish the grape is where you get sort of the Kendall Jackson nuances.
Well, yes.
Or they finish the wine, I mean.
Yes, in the cheapest example, yes. But in the finest example, the best thing you can do, or the best winemakers basically get out of the way of good grapes.
Ah,
so cool. If you have excellent fruit,
yeah.
You crush it, you let it naturally ferment, natural right. Yeast fly out of the air and land in the barrel and ferment the wine.
Uh-huh.
And you just get out of the way because there's nothing better than good quality grapes.
Right.
Now, in the grocery store mass-produced version, they're sourcing grapes from millions of acres across the state and basically manufacturing a style. And you can do that. Obviously, oak barrels are expensive, and oak sourcing is just as important as grape sourcing.
Right.
So they'll buy a certain acre of oak trees in France, you know, uh-huh. Years, 50 years in advance.
Radical.
And for the best oak barrels, which are $1,500 a barrel or something ridiculous. But to make that manufactured style, what they'll often use is just giant vats, and they add oak chips.
Wow.
Just dump in oak chips or even sawdust.
Are there some cow chips mixed in there?
There could be. So you make these very woody and you add vanilla. You toast the oak with vanilla, basically.
Uh-huh.
So it has all those flavors that it then imparts in the wine. So you're fermenting the wine with oak chips. You scoop all the oak chips out and the wine has been imparted with that flavor. So it's a manufactured style as opposed... Like the grapes are almost neutral that are coming in, you know?
Right.
And then you're just adding kind of layers
of... And the Chardonnay grape is a red grape, right? And they skin it?
No.
Is it a Pinot grape or something?
No.
It's a white grape.
Chardonnay is the name of the grape, and it's a green grape in color. But when you squeeze it, the juice is clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't there a grape that... Isn't there a wine where it's a red grape, but they take the skin off?
Well, all even red wines have clear flesh inside. The color just comes from macerating the skin.
Ah.
Except for there's one red grape called Alicante Boucher, which actually has red juice.
Ah.
But nobody drinks that.
Oh.
So, well, anyways,
that's a lot of
what
income.
Kind of a podcast is this? Surf podcast?
What would we call this?
Wine.
Vino and sand.
So,
yeah, we're talking whatever. Surf.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. David's email is surfsplendorpodcast.
Yeah, it's hello. surfsplendorpodcast.com.
Surfsplendorpodcast. Feel free to send us questions or advice or criticism, and we get a little bit and a lot of all of that. And my email, surftalksandiego@gmail.com.
There you go.
surftalksandiego@gmail.com. You can tell I get a lot of emails.
Do you want to recap at all on our last show? I know that after it, you posted some stuff on Facebook about the Otis Carey racism controversy. Do you have any thoughts on that? Closing thoughts?
As I recall, I did talk with Corey Schumacher about it, and she kind of pointed me in the right direction about racism.
The right direction?
Well, in a direction that my heart feels is correct.
Oh, okay.
That my spirit, you know... Like, look, you can either be right or you can be free. And a lot of times my ego wants to be right, mm-hmm. and therefore I'm not free because I'm chained in my ego.
Yeah.
But luckily, I can be convicted enough to understand that, you know what, Scott, maybe you're wrong. Maybe there's a different way to look at it.
Sure.
And she basically kind of said, look, people can be racist and not even mean it. Like, they weren't intentioned to be that way. But it doesn't mean they're not racist. And that was sort of what I got from Corey, was that, you know, the nicest people in the world can be racist pigs and not even know it. It doesn't mean that they're not being racist.
Sure.
And so that was sort of enlightening for me.
What's interesting, I think, about that whole topic is both fighting sides are fighting for the same exact thing. Like, both sides of that argument are against racism. Like, nobody's actually for racism. We're just arguing this detail of what constitutes when you should file a $200,000 lawsuit or not, basically, you know? And what constitutes intention, like Corey is arguing, versus, you know, it doesn't matter if it was intentional, it still hurts somebody's feelings.
Yeah, and I will tell you, too, she pointed out that the video that we pointed out,
yes,
that she said, I don't see anywhere where Otis Carey is jumping up and down like a monkey.
Yeah.
Now, he did take bananas and put bananas in the fins, but it could be argued that's the only fruit shape that has a fin sort of shape. And
yeah.
And so she took a little bit of exception with us suggesting that in that video, Otis Carey is acting like a monkey.
Yeah. And that wasn't necessarily... that wasn't my assessment of it. That was just, I saw the video and thought maybe Nate Myers could have made that assessment of the video prior to writing the article. You know, like he watched his video and that came up for him and that motivated the writing, but whatever.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
All right. I gotcha.
All is said and done.
Good backtracking.
Yeah. You like that? you see Sally Fitzgibbon's KFC commercial?
No, I did not, thank God. But I think she's really a cute girl.
She's amazing. And yeah. She runs, like, she does Ironmans and runs marathons. She's super fit.
Yeah.
But she is featured in a Kentucky Fried
Chicken. An American
chicken.
KFC or an Australian?
Australian.
Yeah, I was going to say.
For them, they're rolling out a healthy version or a healthier version on their menu, which is KFC Grillers. Grilled rather than fried.
Let's call it Grillers.
Which is also why they've shortened the name. Instead of Kentucky Fried Chicken, they changed the name to KFC.
Ah.
To start to back away from the fried connotation. Yeah.
You know, Gatorade did that too. You'll notice that sometimes Gatorade's called like G16 or something. Or
G2.
G2.
They have like different versions of Gatorade. Yeah.
And it's because there was a lawsuit. The guy who owned Gatorade had his specific recipe and it didn't have sugars in it, obviously, right? Yeah. And they're like, let's dump a bunch of sugar, you know, saccharin or whatever, you know, whatever sugar it was. And so they had to change the name.
Well, I'm all for Sally trying to strike while the iron's hot. And if you are offered a one-time commercial that probably pays more than, you know, maybe a year worth of income for somebody else, go ahead and take it. Sell yourself out.
Now, I'm stoked for her too. You know what?
It's funny.
I've met her before. She's a really cool person.
Yeah. I just thought it was kind of funny. Did you watch Dane Reynolds' new edit?
No.
Oh. It's called Feeding or Feeder or something like that. Dane Reynolds has not been updating Marine Layer.
Is this must-see TV?
No, it is not, actually. That's really? Why I'm asking.
And did it come from Quicksilver then?
No. It's his own production on Marine Layer.
Oh, it is on
there. Yeah. And, I mean, as everybody knows, like, Marine Layer was super hot for 2 years, probably, of just... He was producing the best clips every single time he posted something.
Yeah.
And he would post something at least once a month.
Yeah.
And stopped doing the world tour and kind of focused on his free surf career. But in the last year to 18 months, has done neither, really. He hasn't really been updating Marine Layer. And so it was kind of odd to see this video pop up, but really exciting, too. Like, I was really anxious to watch it. And I watched it, and it's fine. It's not spectacular. It's him surfing Oxnard beach breaks, as always, with booties. And he's ripping, but it's not ripping harder than he ever has in the past. It's not like an updated Dane Reynolds. It's just kind of more the same that we remember. But my question for you is just, do we care anymore?
I do.
Do you?
I'm like you. I'm excited if Dane Reynolds puts something out. Do I care anymore about Oxnard and booties? Maybe not, but I'm psyched if he's, you know, like when he put out that Selena Cruz stuff of him in Mexico at this.
That was when he was, like, breaking new boundaries every edit, though.
I just like his style. Like, yeah. To me, it's like, I can watch Machado, I can watch Tom Curran, I can watch Dane Reynolds. Guys whose style I love, Craig Anderson, I can watch them, you know, I can't get enough of it, you know, because I try to incorporate a lot of that stuff into what I do, And I think that that's the case with people who love Andy Irons. You know, you just can't mm-hmm. get enough Andy Irons. You're willing to watch Andy Irons over and over and over. And for me, personally, I'm a fan. And I think he does a lot. I think it's important that kids see him surf because his style is sort of a classical style.
Yeah.
With that, of course, that new era ripping aerial stuff.
I would argue that you don't care as much because you haven't even seen this edit yet. You know what I mean?
Well,
or that the general public doesn't care as much because it wasn't crammed down your throat.
Yeah, I mean...
In the past, it was.
I could easily... If I want to get my Dane Reynolds fix, I'm not necessarily stoked that there's a new one out or an old one out. I might have a favorite that I'll get to and I'll go, oh, I love the way he surfs in that video. Let's watch that video, you know?
But you know, in the past, those 2 years that I was talking about where it was like anything that he did was just top... Like, it was the biggest news of the day or the week.
Yeah.
And you watched it a couple of different times.
Who is that kid now? Who is that guy now, do you think?
I mean, John, maybe? I don't know. But I don't think it's Dane anymore. I think Dane... Like, I feel like, I don't know, back in the day, like, James Dean, you know, or maybe in modern day, it's Johnny Depp or Ryan Gosling or something, where this aloof, they present themselves as just nonchalant, not caring, somewhat aloof. And there's... That mystery of that is very attractive and people kind of chase it, but it can only last a short period of time because if you don't care, ultimately we're not going to care. And I'm wondering if, like, James Dean unfortunately dies and so it kind of lasts in perpetuity, the mystery will always be there. But with Dane, I feel like that mystery is run out almost. And, if you're not caring, we're not caring. And in the meantime, Noah Dean has come along. John Florence has come along. All these other people who have garnered our attention and then actually placated us by winning events and things like that.
Yeah.
We've kind of lost interest.
I've definitely had the, if you don't care, I don't care about his pro surfing career. I've mentioned that on this show many, many times. Like, if you don't give a shit, I don't give a shit. You know what? Screw you. You're off my fantasy team.
Right.
But, and so that's a great point that you bring up. And really, it's kind of like, I'm sort of waiting for that new guy. And I don't think it's John because John's so focused on the tour, which I'm glad.
Yeah.
But maybe it is this Noah Dean, or maybe Craig Anderson comes out with something, or maybe he's even old hat now, you know?
He is, yeah.
And, you know...
I think...
there's always going to be the new Volcom whatever, Shredder, Free Surfer guy. You know, it was Rostovich before... Like, it'd be fun to try to kind of place the chronological timeline of those guys. Like, who is the original Free Surf cat, you know?
Yeah. I mentioned...
It could have been Billy Hamilton. He might have been the original Free Surfer guy. Billy Hamilton. Everyone loved his style. He didn't necessarily do contests, and he was super red hot surfer.
Dora do contests.
Dora might be the original one.
Yeah. So I think I mentioned last show, Jay Davies from Western Australia. For me, whenever a new edit comes out with him, I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna stop what I'm doing and watch it. You don't know who I'm talking
about. I don't even
know
who he is. Has he been on tour forever or something?
He's never been on tour.
Okay. Who am I thinking of that was on tour from West Oz?
Oh.
Jay Davies?
Oh.
Somebody Davies or?
I don't know.
Tall guy?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I'll send you a couple clips. Jay Davies is unreal. All
right.
But again, there's nobody like pursuing, like trying to put an edit out every month like Dane was doing.
The one guy that sort of intrigues me is Clay Marzo.
Dude, I love Clay Marzo.
He's kind of the guy that for some reason, you know, there is some mystery about, you know, like you don't hear from him for 2 years and then he'll go bang, bang, bang and put out three insane edits. And
it's because he has Asperger's,
yeah,
literally.
That's probably why.
Yeah, and he's socially challenged. Like, it's difficult for
him. Yeah, but he's surfing. I mean, you could shoot, you could video. I mean, you could.
But if he's not returning the filmer's call to show up. No, I mean, that
no,
sounds
that's
like
true.
A, that
no,
sounds
I don't
like
mean
a
to
joke.
Laugh, but no, I think that's a good point.
No,
that
sounds like a joke,
like...
but I worked with his previous sponsor for a long time and that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
Oh, he won't show up for trips and he won't return the, you
yeah.
know, and so it's hard to get clips and he
yeah.
only wants to surf that one windy left in Maui.
Right.
And now he wants to surf West Oz all the time because his girlfriend's there, but he won't go on boat trips. So
right.
it's difficult
yeah,
to pin
yeah.
him down and to
yeah.
hit marketing targets.
And that's probably the best thing he's got going is that he's got a natural, relatable, understandable difficultness.
Yeah. But there's, I mentioned again,
difficultness.
Difficulty? I don't know. I mentioned, though, to Steve Pesman as well in that discussion, he has a new series out documenting him. It's called Where is Clay Marzo? Or Who is Clay Marzo?
On the Surfers Journal
no.
website?
No. I was referencing it to Steve about something, but it's on, I think, Epic TV is the name of the production. It's on YouTube, but it's an episodic thing. They did one episode as kind of an intro. And
that's it.
No.
They're still waiting to find him.
So it looks really interesting. And they actually talk to doctors about the Asperger's thing.
Oh, cool.
And so it's really, I'm excited. It could be the rebirth of Clay
Marzo.
He's
a pretty incredible surfer.
Totally. Did you hear about ASP announcing their partnership with Pacifico Beer?
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah.
I'm all about that.
Totally.
It doesn't surprise me that a beer company would jump on. I mean, beer companies have been, you know, you had the Bud Light tour here
yeah.
forever. And, I mean, you know, even way back there was the Smirnoff event in Hawaii in the early 70s. And so there's always been liquor or beer involved because if there's young 18 to 25 year old males, that's a prime target. Let's advertise.
Totally. They're specifically the U.S. beer sponsor. So Jim Sabia from Pacifico said that Pacifico will be at every WCT event in the U.S., hosting fan experiences at contest sites and throughout the local areas. The beer that was originally brought to the U.S. by surfers will also partner with endemic brands to celebrate the events, adding to the nightlife with great music, good vibes, and cold beer. Boom.
I don't partake anymore, but the Baena was the one that I remember, that big, round, massive bottle of Pacifico, the Baena, which is, of course, what?
Family size or what?
Whale.
Oh, okay.
That's whale in Espanol.
Okay.
Baena.
Yeah, awesome.
They should bring back the Baena. What is the Pacifico fan experience exactly? It's probably just like a big room with radical surfing and Pacifico signs all around it.
Yeah.
And then somehow or another, they capture your data.
I'm cool with it. I heard a rumor that Dustin Barca is running for mayor in Kauai.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
did you hear
insane.
About that?
That's cool. How did you hear about this rumor?
Dude,
like, where do you, on Facebook?
Of
or?
Course.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
most reputable, reliable source of news.
All good news comes from Facebook. I heard that Chuck Norris is running for president. or his beard is running for president.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Dustin Barca obviously has been, become kind of a political activist against Monsanto in Kauai. And so this is kind of an extension of that, I think. But I Googled it. There's no news information.
I was just Googling.
So it may not actually be true. But again, it's part of our rumor or gossip hour of the show. So just keep your ears peeled
for that. I
don't know
if it's gossip. Is there a better word we can use besides gossip?
Well, I like to.
What would you call it?
I like to state
innuendo?
It. Innuendo. I like to state it as gossip, so that I'm not held accountable for it later when
right.
it comes out as it's not true.
Right.
You know.
All right.
Covering my bases.
Right.
But if
true,
it is true,
might not be true. Could be true. But if it is true,
you heard it here first.
Right. If it's not true, we heard it on Facebook.
Do you want to hear an update about the Fukushima radiation? Like a non-boring update.
Is there such a thing? Are there like girls in bikinis in Japan dancing around Fukushima?
I'll tell you what. Okay, reel me in. Okay, if it gets too boring. Corduroy TV actually posted this, and basically, I'll just read you.
Cyrus bought a Geiger counter.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Did you read it?
Well, I know Cyrus, so okay. I know what he's up to.
Yeah.
He bought a Geiger counter, and then what did he do?
He bought a Geiger counter, and in his travels, he was in Russia. He's been in Japan a number of times.
He's been doing like his own little tests everywhere with his Geiger counter?
He has. And he basically said, for us surfers on the West Coast,
we're screwed.
No, there's nothing to worry about.
Oh, cool.
In terms of what the data shows, there's nothing to be concerned about. Let me read this to you, though, because he's been giving his Geiger counter readings to a larger entity that's collecting all this data.
Oh, cool.
And that guy's name is Sean Bonner, and he started a company called Safecast in 2009 to mine the globe for radiation data, deploying GPS-enabled robots and people to measure radiation levels in every place they could reach, which currently includes all of Japan, large swaths of the U.S., parts of Europe, Asia, and Africa. All the data they collect, 16 million data points so far, is free to anyone and everyone to use and analyze, which tons of government and journalists do. And this is really huge because previously, the only data provided was from the Japanese government, which was copyrighted and only contained 3,000 data points.
That guy is smart. That guy that's developed this new business.
No, I mean,
that is really cool.
And it's very kind of forward thinking, yeah. And just altruistic almost, you know?
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
But basically, the long and the short of it is that the science so far says that we on the North American West Coast have nothing to worry about.
Cool.
And unfortunately, I don't know what it says for everybody listening who's other places in the world. But go to Safecast and check it out.
I think the airline tickets to Southern California just went through the roof. What about the San Diego Surf Film Festival? I know that's coming up here on May 10th.
I know. I want to go.
I bought tickets for the last evening. I think it's the Saturday night. I don't know if it was May 10th or May 11th. I think it starts on May 7th.
Okay.
And there's probably, I don't know, 15 films, mm-hmm. like maybe 5 or 6 feature length, like 45-minute films. And then a bunch of short, like 12-minute, 2-minute, 5-minute films, which I really like.
How much are tickets? Do you know?
$15.
Oh, okay.
They put you in blocks, you know. So I bought 2 blocks. I bought like Saturday from 4 to 6, and Saturday from 9 to 11, or something like that. And maybe you should go Saturday.
Okay.
You can go to those 2 blocks on Saturday. I mean, but look at the films and see the ones you want to see, you know.
I want to go, but I also want to reach out to some of the filmmakers in advance and maybe get some interviews done while I'm there.
Well, I bet if you reached out to
Pierce and Petra, the two that put on the show. They may or may not, you know, because there's Meet the Filmmaker night. Like you can, but you have to buy the pass to get into that.
Yeah.
So you might, maybe you could write off your Nautilus pass. That's what they call it, the Nautilus pass. Mm-hmm. And it's basically you get into everything. And there's two or three different, you know, Meet the Filmmakers, you know, Nautilus pass holders only allowed type things. And, you know, last year, Jeff Baldwin and I broadcast live from... We canned a show from there. We sat outside there and did a show.
Okay.
And, you know, that's an option. I don't know.
What films are you interested in seeing this year?
The Derek Dunphy film, which is about Twig Baker. I wanted to see that.
Like a profile piece?
I guess. I think it's like a year in the life, but I really don't know. I just, for whatever reason... Derek Dunphy's done some stuff in the past with film that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to see that. And I think in that block, it's sort of a toss up. I don't know what, I'm going to go in the last night because they give the awards. It'll be the most mojo kind of happening. It'll probably be the most crowded. And I was like, yeah, I'll go the last night. And then I saw Derek's film and I'm like, oh, I want to see that because I've seen some stuff he's done. It's pretty good.
He's done really interesting film work, actually.
Yeah.
Like short films. Have you seen any of those really dark series that he's done that involve like murders and stuff?
No.
They're scripted and acted. And one of them included Chippa Wilson gets murdered by this chick.
Rad.
Yeah, really weird. No dialogue, like artsy, but again, dark. Like this killer shows up at the beach, you know, and there's a narrative to it. There's a storyline,
right?
But ends up killing Chippa Wilson. It's called Shade.
Rad.
Shade. There was like Shade 1, Shade 2. But again, I watched it because I knew his name and I was expecting a surf video and was just like, what the heck is this? Wow. Really cool music and scoring. I'll put those on surfsplendorpodcast.com. I'll have to dig them up because it was probably a year ago that I saw him. But he's a good writer. He's an amazing big wave surfer, obviously.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by what he can put out, so I want to see that.
Interesting stuff. Dude. Yeah. I've never met him.
I haven't either.
Yeah, cool. Have you heard about that, I think it's called Bella Vita or something?
Yeah, I'm a supporter, film? I put some, I did some Kickstarter money to that to get him going, and I'm sure that'll be, I don't know what's going on with that film.
Who's the filmmaker? Jason Baffa.
Oh, is it? Yeah, it's Jason Baffa. Yeah, Jason Baffa is a very well-known, he's a really good filmmaker.
Took the Coffin Brothers to Italy, and they did like a surf trip through Italy.
Yeah, Chris Del Moro.
Yeah, Chris Del Moro.
And is it the Coffin Brothers?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's probably some Italian surfers in there,
probably,
too. I understood it to be sort of Chris Del Moro's path through his past, through his heritage.
Oh, okay.
But I could be wrong.
No, maybe it is, and those guys were just along for the ride. I always wanted to see that when it got advertised and was in production, and I think they're debuting it there.
Oh, are they?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what date that. But the San Diego Surf Film Festival, if you're listening, just Google San Diego Surf Film Festival, and all the films and everything will pop up.
Yeah.
And it's like May 7th to May 10th or something. Okay. May 6th or something like that.
Can we talk about Bell's Beach?
Yes, Bell's Beach. Ring the bell.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Hashtag it's on.
Hashtag it's on.
Make
hashtag,
it ring.
I wasn't impressed with Winky Pop during the finals. I was sort of let down.
Yeah, well, I think it was a better choice than the Bell's Bowl.
Yeah, I guess,
which was
I guess
falling
so.
Apart.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I'll just real quick event recap. Carissa Moore won in the women's against Tyler Wright again, rematch. And both girls surfed amazing. Carissa got slightly the better opportunities and capitalized. And then in the men's event, Mick Fanning won again against Taj Burrow in the final this time. And on the final day, they had to move the event from Bell's over to Winky Pop, I think in the semifinals. But yeah, Winky was slowly getting worse throughout that day as well. So it was kind of a lackluster final day. But nevertheless, Mick Fanning is the new Bell's champ.
Mick Fanning and Taj Burrow, mid-30 something surfers, not necessarily known for like new school stuff. Although Taj Burrow, 10 or 15 years ago was like sort of one of the new school icons.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say about either the wave itself or the tour that it seems like? Don't get me wrong. I love Mick Fanning and the way they surf, and I think all those guys, you know, I think Taj and Mick deserve to be in it. But I'm wondering if we're getting to a place where we're regressing a little bit. Like, are the judges not? And I know Bell's isn't an aerial wave, and the winds were offshore and all that. But
and this is yet to be determined, but are we getting to a place where we're sort of homogenizing the judging a little bit, and we're not, there aren't spikes and great scores for, remember a couple of years ago, there was like one maneuver waves were nines, you know?
Well, yes, we are there, but I don't think it has to do with the judging or the ASP decision-making as much as it has to do with the wave. Like, I don't think that we should have an event at Margaret's, and I don't think we should have an event at Bell's, because you're right. It benefits the boring surfer, you know, and Mick Fanning, that is a criticism of Mick Fanning's surfing, is that he's boring.
Yeah.
And if he's the guy who can perform the best out there, then I really don't think that's a great choice for a stop on tour.
Well, a couple of things. The first hurdle is the heritage and the legacy of the Bells Beach event. It's like 63 years old.
Right.
And there's no way you're going to go to Australia and tell an Australian, we're not going to do Bells anymore. Like, that's like saying you're not going to have the Masters at Augusta. You know, it's a big deal.
It's
a bigger deal than I think you realize. Like, for the culture and the trip in Australia. Like, you and I are like, oh, lame wave. Why do they do it there? Whatever, 60 years. I mean, it's easy to gloss over it from this perspective, but if you're there in that history and that culture and all of that legacy, I mean, you're talking Michael Peterson, you know, like five-time winner or whatever. You know, the stories of that, you know, there's just too much. 60 years, you just can't wipe it off the face of the earth, you know?
I don't want to wipe it off the face of the earth. I want to not make it a CT event, you know? I think that all the local people will be bummed about it, but if you ask the Australian surfers who are on tour, I would bet that they would want...
I doubt it. If they did, they wouldn't say it out loud. They might tell you after, you know, over a couple of drinks. Maybe. In a hush-hush moment. But
yeah.
I don't think there's any Australians that would be like, yeah, Bells is lame. Let's wipe it off the CT.
Well, then let me read a quote to you.
Okay.
Four-time Rip Curl Pro winner Mark Richards is on records as saying Bells, quote, is a dud, the most overrated wave in the world.
I'm not doubting that. I agree with Mark. And so you're saying, Scott, look, here's an older guy that... He has nothing to lose by saying that. He's got four Bells.
Sure.
I think the young guys, the guys on tour, wouldn't say that. Even if they felt, and maybe many do feel that way, they're not going to go out and say it out loud.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is a couple things. You're slapping Claw, the guy who runs Rip Curl, in the face.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. And Singer. You don't want to ruin, you know, you don't want to bum those guys out.
Yeah.
Is it Singer? I think it's Singer. Brian Singer. Anyway, and then you're slapping the community down there. You know, Torquay is, they're going to be, you know, there's some money that's involved in the event down there. And then all the history, you know, like I'd be interested to know how a guy like PT, what PT thinks about the idea of, guess what? The wave's too crappy. We're wiping it off the CT. I don't know. I mean, especially relative to, you know, they've had CTs at Huntington Pier.
Right, but we don't anymore. I'm looking at the forward evolution of surfing and the way that people ride waves. And to say that, well, we've been riding at that spot 60 years ago, I'm like, well, freaking A, that's not a good reason to continue doing it forward. That's a reason to, if you want to take a longboard out there, then let's go do that comp, you know?
Well, a couple of things. It does do some interesting things for board choice, because we saw Jeremy Flores struggle mightily. He surfed horribly. It looked so bad that it looked like he was hung over or something. It was ridiculous how bad he looked.
I think that was a mental thing. I think he was on the wrong board, but to bog rail like that, I mean, that's how I surf.
No, he looked bad.
Like, he was horrible.
It looked like something was wrong.
Yeah.
But see, that's my point about, you mentioned longboarding. Like, the board choice there is sort of interesting. You know, they do have to, I mean, if I surfed there, I'd be riding a fish.
Yeah. Yeah, or skate through the flat parts of that wave.
You get one or two bangs. And,
yeah. Here's my other problem with Bells, and the same goes for Margaret's, is that there's way better waves right around the corner. You know, it's like, that's a problem for the WCT event if there's a better wave across the harbor. And then you end up moving the event to that spot and it's more exciting than the original venue. That is a problem for the ASP.
Yeah.
And
that could be a situation where they just reframe the event.
Exactly.
To the Bells, you know, or it's like ring the bell at Torquay or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they can have it at Winky or wherever and not necessarily have it... And they can say, oh, we're going to look at Bells, but...
Exactly. But everybody knows Winky's the primary shot, yeah. You know? The other issue with that wave, here's just basically evidence to support my theory, is that Seabass, Slater, Taj, Gabriel Medina, and CJ Hobgood all won their round one heats with a heat total below 11 points.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
That's boring surfing.
That's unfortunate.
As the viewer, that's just boring.
Yeah.
I thought Sean Doherty's piece on Surfer Magazine summed it up well. He said, surfing bells, even when it's good, is like trying to dance with a corpse.
It's like surfing Cardiff where I surf. It's just a crappy wave. Like, I agree with you. At the end of the day, it's just not that... It doesn't dance back. You know what I mean?
It does not.
Yeah.
What did you think about my comment about Fanning just being a boring surfer? I see that come up pretty regularly. Do you have thoughts
on that? I see that. I see other people say that as well. I mean, it's kind of like, what are the... You know, is he boring at Pipeline? No. Is he boring at Chopu? No.
In this event, was he a boring surfer?
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, he didn't do what Jordy Smith did. You know, Jordy Smith was sort of the talk of the event.
Yeah.
Jordy Smith on that one wave looked pretty damn incredible. And so Mick Fanning, boring. Yeah, I mean, you know what you're going to get with Mick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At least Kelly mixes it up. You don't really know what's coming next.
Right.
Mick, you know what's coming next.
Right.
I mean,
I see people's argument with him being boring, but I'm not mad at him about it.
I'm not either.
I enjoyed watching.
Yeah, he's an incredible power gouged, you know, I mean, he's just, you know, a 3-time world champion. It's hard to be bored with perfection. You know, he's a great surfer. So
yeah.
Now there's others that I would be bored with, you know, there, especially where you're just like, oh God.
Name them.
You want me to name some guys? Off the top of my head, I really don't, it's nothing's coming to my head, but.
Kai Otten. You know what I mean? Like Kai Otten. He surfs well, but can I remember a single wave he rode at Bells? No.
I can. They're all the same. It's like boom, 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 boom. You know, it's kind of like, and that's sort of when you, you know, try to visualize the surfing that those 2 weeks at Bells, you just sort of go, okay, two hits, milk it through the fat section and bank it or do whatever you're going to do on the end section.
Right.
And that's it. That's what it is. Ring the bell. Yippee.
A word on scoring. We'll get to the Jordy controversy as kind of a main topic.
Controversy? What controversy?
Right.
That was no 10.
And, we'll get to that. But a word on scoring is just I feel like I can always rationalize how the judges came to their decisions with scoring, even if I disagree with it. I can usually understand how it fit the criteria that they've set. I feel like this event, the scoring went backwards a little bit, where it was hard to rationalize some stuff. Specifically, Kaloe's loss to Kelly in round one, heat 7, that was tough to justify. Kaloe shredded 2 waves, both of which were better than Kelly's 2 waves. Jacob Wilcox, the wild card, lost to Josh Kerr in round 2, heat 1, where he needed a score at the very end, and he arguably got the best wave of the heat, and they didn't give him the score. And I think that was an indicator of just like, if you're going to beat the champ, you have to KO him. And Josh Kerr's not a champ, but it was wild card versus top 10 surfer. So I feel like Jacob Wilcox got the short end of that stick.
That's interesting. The whole concept of, do you have to KO the better surfer, the higher seated surfer?
It's unintentional, but it's kind of true that ends up happening.
It does happen. Influencing. It does happen.
Jordy versus Julian. Do you want to give me the play-by-play
that's the big
on
one,
that?
Right? Was that the big one?
Did you see
well,
it?
Well, yeah, I watched it.
Okay.
I watched it, and I was, you know, it could have gone either way.
Who did you think, who was your gut with won that heat?
Jordy.
You thought Jordy won the
heat?
Yeah,
but I was glad he didn't. Just
why?
Based on my fantasy team.
Oh, gosh.
What?
Based on every time we talk about this, I'm a huge Jordy fan and you're an anti-Jordy fan.
I'm not a big fan of Jordy, but not his surfing so much as he sort of has over-it-itis.
Yeah, I know.
And now this year he's like totally into it and all of a sudden things aren't going his way and he's you know, a little bit immature.
Let me reset the topic real quick.
Did I take it off?
No. But for
the
fans, no, just for the fans who didn't see the heat, you know, it's like Julian's first wave score was a 7-something. Jordy's next wave was better than that. So it was an 8.17, I think. Julian then got an even better wave, which bumped it up to it can only be, you know, a 1.5 better before it gets to a 10, but it wasn't a 10. So they gave him like a 9-something. And then the final moments of the heat are counting down. A wave comes to Jordy, needing the score.
Smaller wave relative to the other waves.
Correct.
It was a smaller wave.
Okay. But he surfs it better than the previous three waves had been surfed in that event. But the judging kind of, the judges backed themselves into this corner of, he surfed it better than Julian's 9.33 or whatever that was. But was this a 10? My argument watching it was, I don't know if it was a 10, but it was certainly 2 points better than Julian's 9.33.
It was an 11.
It was, you know, but I mean, I've seen 10-point rides, and to me that wasn't necessarily a 10, but Julian's first wave getting scored a 7, whatever it was, I actually probably have it written down. Yeah, Julian's first wave was actually an 8.17. He bogged on the first turn. He did a better version of that on the second turn, and then did the exact same turn on the third turn. So it's three identical turns. There's zero variety of repertoire, and he bogged on the first one, and they gave him an 8.17.
He didn't really bog, but he was got caught up a little bit.
Okay.
Like, you know, during a portion of, yeah, you know, flowing through that turn, there was a little bit of a rail catch.
As you're watching it in the moment, I'm going, okay, he didn't nail that first turn, so it can't be a great score.
Right.
Then the second one, it's pretty good. He improved upon the first. Third one, same thing.
Here's the thing, though, is that he got three massive, well, two and three quarter massive turns outside, right?
I didn't think they were massive.
Well, they were turns outside, yeah, like
correct,
good solid turns.
Correct.
Not like connector turns. And the judges look for that. Now, how many of those did Jordy get? Did he get, on the outside, did he get two or did he get three?
On his big wave?
Yeah, on his big final score? On his final wave.
Two.
That's part of it right there.
But Julian's had zero variety of repertoire, and he made a mistake on one of them.
I'm not arguing, you know, what I'm saying is that
that's one of the things they're looking at.
Yeah, you could now rationalize their viewpoint.
Right. Well, my thought watching that wave before the controversy happened was just Julian's 8 point whatever shouldn't have been an 8. When I watched it, I was criticizing it, and I'm like, that should have been a 6, but whatever, no big deal. Let's move on. And then it became very important in the end, you know, where it's like, well, the reason why Jordy didn't win this event was essentially his scale got set too high on the first wave. And then every wave after that was surfed better, but it had to fit within a 2 point spectrum, which wasn't enough room to move.
Yeah.
And, but I was arguing that it wasn't a 10, but I'm basically the only buddy who argued that, because even Kelly Slater said it was absolutely a 10. It was the best wave surfed this entire event, probably throughout the entire year. Again, Sean Doherty's piece, he said, I quizzed 6 past Bell's winners' opinions on the subject, and their reaction ranged from, he clearly should have won it, to, Jordy took his chops and leaves Bell's with a moral victory, if not an actual one. So basically, all 6 past Bell's winners thought Jordy should have won.
I will say that he handled himself pretty well after, you know, in the post-heat interview.
Yeah. Well, one of the things he said that stuck out to me, because it's been a problem with judging, is he said, sometimes I feel like I'm being judged on what my ability is rather than what I actually did on the wave.
Like what he has to live up to, you mean?
Yeah, like judges watch him take off on a wave and they're like, Jordy Smith is up.
It better be good.
It better be good.
Yeah, I know.
Versus a no-name guy taking off.
Yeah.
You know, Jacob Wilcox.
Yeah.
He's starting with a 0 and they're just adding points to his total.
There's some truth to that, I think. That's the nature of surfing exhibition, an athletic endeavor, an athletic exhibition, and that's what this is. There's been a lot more of that argument about, is this sport? You know, like, what is sport, you know?
You love that topic.
Well, I don't necessarily love the topic, but I think that it'd be helpful if we defined it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What is true sport? And look, there's incredible events and activities that are athletic endeavors or athletic exhibitions, like free climbing, you know, half dome or something without any ropes, or, you know, like that's not a sport.
Mm-hmm.
There's no defenders there. There's nobody scoring points for you,
right.
But it's an insane athletic endeavor. And so I'm not trying to take away from anything. I'm just saying, like, anytime somebody that's giving you points that doesn't do it as good as you.
Yeah.
It's kind of lame.
Yeah. I think
that being said, I love pro surfing.
Right. The athletic endeavor. Not the sport.
Yeah, it's an incredible athletic endeavor.
I think
an exhibition.
Almost everything that I saw about that
heat. And it's a competition, but it's not a sport.
Right, right. Almost everything I saw about that heat, everybody agreed Jordy should have won.
Yeah.
Whether or not it was a 10, there was more debate, but everybody agreed Jordy should have won.
I was surprised he didn't win. And I was gleeful.
I would like to...
Because Julian moved on.
I was bummed. Actually, what I did was in my fantasy surfing account on ASP's website, I had Julian. But in my fantasy surfer account on Surfer Magazine's website, I had Jordy.
God, get it. You're the worst type of fantasy player, huh? You're just like playing all the... You're like a hedge fund man.
I want to win, dude.
Betting against yourself.
Even if I got to lose somewhere, I'm going to win somewhere else.
I want 180 bucks.
I saw that. You were excited about that.
I was.
Jeez.
I've been trying to win in that league for years.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to take a moment just to describe Jordy.
What about Freddie P? He got robbed.
Oh, yeah. Freddie P's right.
Who was that against? CJ or?
Gosh, it was a goofy footer.
Ace or somebody.
Nat Young, maybe?
Yeah, it might have been Nat Young. There's a lot of guys, a lot of my Hawaiian friends on Facebook that were really pissed off about the Freddie P decision.
Yeah.
But go ahead, move on.
Well, no, I wanted to just recap Jordy's actual wave that he rode. The combination of turns that he did, I thought was akin to the way that Dane Reynolds surfed. And Andy Irons, for that matter, talking about improv. He just did like a huge wrap open power, like open face gouge, which is ideal for bells. But the way that he came out of it, like at the end of the turn, compressed, like straight into transitioning to the other rail into a really compressed bottom turn, which just projected him up into the lip, into a big blow tail. So it's almost the wake that he set off of his first rail turn was then what he bounced and did a big blow tail off of. That combination of maneuvers was so old school and new school and radical and improvised and powerful and finessed that was 9 points alone.
But it's Jordy. He's supposed to do exactly. that. So let's give him an 8.
I mean, I just think that's worth watching multiple times because it was so beautifully poetic and just raw. Like, it was incredible, you know? And then he does one really amazing cutback, actually, before the flat section.
Yeah.
And then does an air rev on the inside. It was a beautiful wave. Yeah. A lot of downtime in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But beautiful wave. I would encourage.
The ending wasn't the cleanest. I mean, if you want to be hypercritical.
He already got a 9 on that one combo, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So, but one thing that was interesting, too, with Adriano de Souza after he lost, in his post-heat interview, said he's planning to stay at Bells for a few more days to continue practicing for next year.
I love that.
Have you heard of that before? I mean, that's insane.
You know, I'm sure people hang out. They might not say it, but I'm sure people hang out and surf and hang out in Torquay for a bit.
For those guys, I don't think they do. I think they have a short...
Well,
they
like, also, I hate this wave. Get me out of here.
Not only that, but they have such a limited amount of time at home throughout the course of the year that it's like, I've been in Australia for 2 months now. I want to get 2 weeks at home before Rio.
Yeah.
And so most people are on a plane the moment they lose. But Adriano showed up early, surfed a ton, and he's staying late to continue surfing. I think that says something more about his competitive fire than it says about Jordy Smith, for example.
Yeah.
You know? So that's worth noting. And he won last year, so worth noting for next year.
Okay.
If they still have it next year.
I'll forget.
I'll remind you.
ADS.
AIDS.
What about, is Kelly going to go to Rio?
I think so.
Yeah, I do too.
Did he say he wasn't?
No.
Or is there any speculation that he's not?
Well, no, but it's widely known that he hates it.
Yeah, but he's not doing that well right now. He hasn't won any events, hasn't made. So I think he needs to. I think he's sitting in fifth or sixth or something.
Yeah.
One thing that I notice about Kelly, started noticing it at Snapper. Everybody is always curious about what boards Kelly's riding. And there's a lot of talk about epoxy, and then at Snapper, he's riding this stringerless green board. But if you really pay attention, he's not riding those boards in his heats. He's riding them in free surfs. Everybody's talking about him. He's got them littered through the contest area. But if you look what he rides in his heats, it's a 5'9 polyester, maybe a 5 fin, sometimes a 4, sometimes a 3, depending on the waves. But he's riding the same 5'9 in every heat, pretty much. I feel like that might be a little mental game on his part, where he shows up with 5 weird-looking boards, gets people talking about it, rides them in free surfs. Once the heat starts, 5'9 polyurethane.
Cool. I love it.
Pay attention to that.
Yeah, I will.
So.
Good stuff.
What do you... Billabong XXL?
Yeah. Let's see here. So I'm on the voting academy for the Billabong XXL. And I have my vote, my ballot. Excuse me, thank you. Too many crazy years.
You have your ballot mailed in?
Yeah,
already,
I do. It's already mailed in. So
Your choices are final, so I can't influence your opinion right now.
No, it's too late. The Double XL Ride of the Year Award nominees, right? So these are Double XL, Big Waves, Ride of the Year Award nominees. Grant Baker, Shane Dorian, Billy Kemper, Greg Long, and Sean Walsh.
Three of which are at Jaws.
Right.
Yeah. So a little bit of similarity amongst those.
Yeah, three of which are at Jaws. Of the three at Jaws, I thought Billy Kemper's was the best.
Yeah. He gets barreled, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a top tube, like, but he's deep.
Right.
Shane Dorian's, I don't even understand why it's in there.
Really?
There's better waves of him, I believe. He doesn't get tubed, he's just kind of in the pocket.
Right. Pocket red.
And then Sean Walsh's is better than Shane Dorian's, I thought. And then Grant Baker at Dungeons in South Africa gets this wave, but it's shot from pretty far away, and he's kind of blocked in part of it, too, you know, by the wave that's breaking in front of the wave that he's on, so you don't really get a really great angle of him. And so the ride that I voted for was Greg Long's wave at Puerto Escondido, where he just takes off on a beastie left,
backside,
super gnarly backside, super deep on like a, you know, a 9-8 surfboard, and it's just, it's quite frankly, these things are hard to vote for. There are so many of them, you're just kind of overloaded with so much stuff that you're like, they're all gnarly. I don't know. They're just incredible, you know? Like,
yeah.
So what I try to do is I try to just take one look through them and go, which one's the raddest? And not think too much, because you start getting too deep into the thought of it
just
all.
Just what's your visceral reaction?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And so Greg Long, he was the winner for me. That's my vote. Greg Long and the Ride of the Year.
Unfortunately, I didn't have as much of a visceral reaction because you had, before I saw them, you had told me how nuts Greg Long's wave was. So I had a lot of anticipation for that, and I set my bar a little too high, I think.
Uh-oh.
Because when I watched it, I thought it was super sick and like an amazing ride. But in terms of the big wave competition, and I didn't think it competed with some of the waves at Jaws. And I thought Grant Baker's was actually the best. And
I think it would have been if it, you know, it's just the angle was so
The
weird.
Angle, though, that's not, that has nothing count. To do with the ride, you know? The reason, let me give you the breakdown.
It says here based, oh, you have it. Okay, because I have it right here, too.
No, the criteria?
Yeah.
No, I don't have that.
Based on the review of the available video images, which surfer demonstrates the most advanced and committed level of big wave surfing performance during a single successful ride during the event period?
Okay.
I think Greg Long's demonstrated that.
Well, let me start out by saying Jaws has a channel, obviously. And there's a lot of people out there on jet skis rescuing. And it's kind of an orchestrated, relatively safe event compared to maybe Puerto Escondido, where it's a big closed out beach break. And you're relying on your own survival mechanisms. So for me, Jaws almost seems less threatening in that respect. And
it's pretty and blue.
It's pretty and blue. They're in warm water, you know, and I'm watching it going, yeah, that was cool. And that was a giant wave and I would never be out there. But I don't know, there's an element of safety involved. Or I watched, I agree with you with Greg Long's. It was pretty death defying and it was an amazing tube ride. But for me, Grant Baker, that angle, he's at Dungeons in South Africa. The angle being so far away makes me realize how much of a threat there is. If the cameraman can't even get close to the surf spot, and that specific wave that Grant Baker got ends up closing out. Like, there is no channel.
Yeah.
He surfs it down the line, but then the whole thing, this mountain of whitewater, just breaks in front of him, and he has to kind of straighten out and avoid it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, how do you even get out of the whitewash and paddle back out? Like, it just looks treacherous.
Yeah.
Open ocean, 30-foot swell, just really treacherous, every man for himself.
Yeah.
So for me, that seemed the most heroic.
Yeah.
I don't get a vote, obviously, but my vote would be with Grant Baker.
All right.
And by the way, he just secured a full-time sponsor.
Yeah. With
Visla,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he used to be on Billabong back in the day, so that makes sense.
It does.
But I think that's cool that Visla steps up to sponsor a big wave surfer, you know, and that's going to be a new thing. And he is the world champ, the big wave world champ. So he's the guy to sponsor. So,
yeah.
Cool. Good on Grant.
The next award is the Tube Award, the Double Extra Large Tube Award. And the nominees were Kai Lenny at Jaws and Alan Ryu at Chopu and Koa Rothman and Laurie Towner and Raimana von Bastelier.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose one of the images of Koa Rothman. That's just, everyone's seen these images. And by the way, you know, go on to XXL and look at this stuff, because, I mean, listening to you and I talk about it, it's not doing it justice.
No, and it's a 10-minute commitment, and you could see all of them.
Yeah, so, and I feel like we should rip through these. I don't know how much time we should spend.
Yeah, rip them.
But so Koa Rothman at Chopu, the Tim McKenna image is the one that I chose.
Yeah, I saw that. That was amazing.
Did you make a choice
on
these?
No, I didn't, but I like that one. It wasn't video. Why is it not video?
I don't know. For whatever reason, that's a still image thing.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of a letdown for me.
And then the overall performance award nominees were Grant Baker, Sean Dollar, Shane Dorian, Greg Long, and Jamie Mitchell. And again, this is one where it's like, they all really deserve this. It's totally kind of hard to, I mean, how do you determine like who has more miles or, you know, who chased more swells? I mean, they all do, they all chase the same swells. And so I just chose Shane Dorian because Dorian to me is, he of all of those guys, he's the guy I think that they all just go. Dorian's the man.
No question. Yeah, yeah, no question.
And then Keala Kenley is the my the women's overall performance, Keala.
Yeah, that barrel she got was pretty nuts.
Yeah, she's insane.
Really deep and like blown out. Like the spit comes out before her, you know, she's fully disappeared behind the spit. So I got a couple thoughts on big wave board evolution that fits into this. You know, that's one area where I think there's a lot of room for board design improvement. And those giant boards are fantastic for paddling into waves, but they're very difficult to maneuver. And so once you kind of make the drop and avoid the whitewash, you can kind of angle it off the bottom. And that's what those guys are doing at Jaws, getting in the barrel a little bit and coming out. But there's very little kind of sharp movements that you can make. I was talking to Richard Kenvin, who last podcast I said that I had a comment on Kenvin, and it was in regards to this, where he was telling me that he thinks asymmetrical board design would really benefit big wave boards, because you know which direction you're going when you're surfing any of those big waves. They're mainly rights, essentially.
Yeah.
And you can get kind of the more foam, you can incorporate more foam into the board so that you have the paddling benefit in the early entry. But also, he's noticed from riding asymmetrical boards, a lot of drive off the bottom on those boards. So you can kind of slingshot off the bottom almost and get back up the face of the wave, and then have that thinner, more tapered rail on your heel side, so that once you get that projection off the bottom and then you need to turn off the face of the wave, you're then using the tapered, thinner rail, you know, to do kind of your more radical surfing.
Mm.
So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting and makes sense. I could see how that might, you know.
Yeah. And then the other thought was, in my interview I did for the podcast with Josh Martin, he was shaping a hot curl that day and was saying like those hot curls really tap into that kind of underneath energy of the wave that seals and body surfers catch, and have a lot of application in bigger waves. Like, they're not as maneuverable, obviously, but in terms of just early entry and being able to get out in front of the whitewash crumble, like, those hot curls would definitely do that.
Well, I'm no big wave surfer, but I do have a big wave board, and it's 11 feet long, and it's my glider that I surf in little small waves. Okay. I have it in my car now. But it's also a board that could ride really, really big waves really, really well. And it has a ton of basically displacement in the nose.
Okay.
And it's an incredible board. And I rode it on some of the bigger days this year at Cardiff, you know, just, you know, like 6 foot, 8 foot waves.
Okay.
But I wanted to get a feel for what it would drop in, like, you know, what the feeling would be like, the bottom turn and so forth. And I think that displacement, almost like a boat hull, you know, having a lot of roll up there in the nose. I know it allows me to get into the wave super fast. And
Cardiff's a soft wave, though. What if you're surfing that at Mavericks? Are you worried about purling?
I don't know. Again, I'm not really the expert, you know, to sort of get into all of that, because I really don't know, you know.
That's the challenge with Mavericks, though, is that it's such a hollow wave, that bowl, the takeoff, that it's like you need rocker or something to fit into that contour.
Yeah, this is a pretty big board, this 11-footer, but yeah. Anyway.
Yep. All right, cool, dude. Billabong XXL. When does that officially happen?
May 2nd. So I think this weekend, right? This Friday or something? This Saturday?
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah.
Kook and Duke?
I don't have a kook or a duke. I come unprepared. I apologize profusely.
It's all right.
I could make one up.
No,
I
can make
you both my kook and my duke.
Again?
No, I wouldn't do that. No.
You said that I have to pick just one kook or one duke, and I can't make it a race of people.
Yeah, you can't throw this wide net.
Okay, well, I'm introducing...
Do you have a race of people you want to make?
No, but in the past, not a race in terms of ethnicity, just like a grouping of people.
What's wrong with being racist?
Go
ahead.
So I'm introducing a new segment this week called Kooks and Dukes.
Oh my God. You're completely just...
not even participating in your game.
I'm totally taken over.
The whole
concept.
I don't mean to. I have a specific kook, but I'm going to have a male and a female duke.
A dukette?
That's right, a dukette. My duke is Glenn Hall.
Okay.
In the Bells event.
Yeah.
I thought, like, talking about boring surfers, Glenn is a boring surfer.
Yeah.
But he has won me over with his charm. You know, I mean, the guy broke his back last year at Cloudbreak, I think it was.
Yeah.
And had to not continue in the event, had to miss the rest of the year, did not get his wild card entry into this year. So it's like he got dealt such a tough hand and it took him forever to get on tour in the first place. So I just feel like he's been dealt a tough hand, but he's tenacious. You know, it's like He's
like an Irish terrier. He's like a little...
He is. And he surfs really well. It is boring, but it's incredibly well. He surfs incredibly well. It's like I find myself rooting for him. And I thought in this event, he surfed really, really well again. He was entered into this event as a replacement for somebody who... I forget who wasn't... Whose spot he took. But at any rate, he did fantastic. And it's like... Then they go to interview him in the post-heat interview, and his voice is so high-pitched. It's like comical almost, you know?
Right.
He's endearing, and everything he says is just really grateful and a lot of gratitude. There's no animosity.
Right.
As opposed to when Bobby Martinez was doing his thing, and he gets in there and just has vitriol that he's always spewing. Glenn's the opposite.
Glenn has some humility.
I like Glenn a lot.
It sounds like I do, too.
I would love to see Glenn more often.
I'm going to root for him now based on your... characterization there.
The other one is Nikki Van Dyke. Did you see her day of destruction?
No. Oh, I saw her fall. I saw her fall. Hit the reef.
Prior to that, she was free surfing, but they have video of it. Free surfing in the morning sesh before they called the event on. She kicks out of a wave into like the flats of the ocean, you know, and just kind of like jumps off her board. The board kind of tombstone pops up and then the wind catches it. And it comes down on her face right as she's coming up out of the water to like shake her hair dry. The rail of the board hits her in the eye, like right in kind of the eye socket.
Sorry about that.
Like you can instantly, you see it just like hit and like go thud and then fall into the water. And she grabs her face, fully gives her a black eye. So she comes in from the free surf. I think she's surfing the first heat of the day with a black eye against Carissa Moore, shaken up, you know. Oh, I think it even cut her eye.
Right.
So she goes out, surfs her heat on one of her waves, surfs it to the inside, and then jumps off the whitewash right onto dry reef. And we hear people talking about jumping off to dry reef, but they actually have like an inch of water in between them and the reef, or they jump into the whitewash.
This is actually dry, not even moist.
She jumps
dry reef.
Somehow, for some reason, jumps forward onto the reef. And you see her body hit it and roll before the whitewash even takes her over. So it's like, it was so brutal.
Is she okay? Can we laugh about this?
Totally.
Okay.
Because thankfully that part of the reef is kind of covered with moss and seaweed.
It's a little soft.
Yeah. Wasn't like sharp razor coral.
Crazy.
But I mean, man, I just wanted to like go and give her a hug afterwards.
That's classic.
Yeah.
Well.
You want to hear who my kook is?
Yeah.
My kook is based on a personal experience.
Okay.
So, I'm surfing the other day. Waves are pretty solid. Perfect set right comes to me. I'm going to say the waves are 3 to 5, 6 feet, whatever. Perfect set right comes to me. Like the one that you don't even have to paddle for. You turn.
Do I know this person?
No, it's just a stranger. Huh. You don't even have to paddle for the thing. You spin around, one paddle in, and you're up, you know? And this guy down the shoulder of the wave is like beelining for the peak. And I'm like, whatever, dude. He can battle all he wants. I'm going to turn around and go on the peak. Well, as I stroke into this wave, I realize he's freaking going no matter what.
Right.
And it wasn't worth even calling him off because there's a million waves out there that day and it wasn't crowded. I didn't even envision that he would go, but he did. So I take off. He takes off right on me, eats crap instantly. And I had kind of, I missed the angle that I needed to get down the wave. So like I end up just kind of stuck in the whitewash. I make it around him, kick out in the whitewash. And there's a set coming. So we're separated by 10 feet, but it's like, I'm not going to address this now. I'm going to paddle out through this set and then we'll sort it out later. So I paddle out and get under the first one or two and end up catching, like I was able to get another wave in that set. It was a left. So I surf the left and I realize he's still caught inside. Paddle out, actually catch another wave. It must have been like a 10 wave set or something, but I got three waves in this set, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like not angry anymore. But he finally is able to make it to the outside. And I'm like, well, I got to say something because he'll do it again. Like, I can't just not say something. It was so blatant. So I paddle straight out to the guy and I'm going to be cool about it. And I'm like, hey, dude, what was up with burning me on that right? Like, not trying to be mean, just, hey, what was up with burning me on that right?
That was your tone? That can't be your tone.
That was the tone. What is the tone supposed to be?
Here's what you do. You paddle up to him and go, hey, look, I'm quite confident you can kick the shit out of me. Okay. This isn't about who can beat up who. This is about what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
And what you did was wrong. And I can tell you how to do it right if you want. Or you can go learn somewhere else. But until you figure it out, you're not allowed to surf out here.
That's a wise way to handle it. Well, I didn't want to be a tough guy about it either. But I was just like, dude, what was up with burning me on that thing?
I would go on to the defensive, though.
Well, so he did.
Yeah.
He did. And he turned around and snapped. He's like, I don't give a F. And just shouts. And I was like, what? He goes, I don't give a F. Like, he was waiting for me to say something,
Right.
And so then I go, whoa. Calm down. I'm not trying to be a tough guy or attack you. I'm just saying, if you're going to burn me on a set wave, you probably shouldn't fall. You know, like...
Yeah.
And he's like, what, and he just like kind of stuttered. And then I realize this happens every year at this time. Like I surf year round at this same couple spots.
Yeah.
And then right around spring break, people show up and they start doing stupid stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other guys in the water who are ripping. And if I'm paddling for a wave, they don't challenge me. They surf better than me, but they just move on to the next wave. This guy who can't even surf. And so... I used that against him. A little bit of localism kind of came through, and I was like, whoa, dude, what are you, on spring break from the 909? Like, showing up, and then you're going to eat it on a set wave?
You broke that line up?
I did. And then he's like...
Now he's really pissed.
Yeah, and then he's like, what? The 909? The 909, for those who aren't around, is an area code for the Inland Empire.
Yeah.
But he's like, what? The 909? And I go, okay, then what? You're visiting from Arizona on spring break? Like, who are you? Like... Yeah. You don't just burn somebody and eat crap in front of them. And I go, and that's the only reason I'm saying that is because you then got caught inside on a 3-foot set. Couldn't even make the paddle out on a 3-foot set. I'm like, good luck catching another wave out here, you know, because I'm going to sit on your inside and burn you on everything.
Wow. So and you have the resentment.
Oh, for sure. Because it's like, why are you arguing with me? You were clearly in the wrong.
Right, right.
And I'm not going to fight you, but I am. I can out-paddle you, as indicated by me paddling through that set. Right. And now I'm going to burn you on every single wave. And
how did that go for you?
Well, I would have, but then I realized I was getting angry and I'd rather just have a good time and surf. And fortunately, there's a little bit of a drift because of the swell. So he ended up down 50 yards down the beach in 1 minute.
Yeah.
And I just surfed the same peak for the next 2 hours. I had a blast, actually. I kind of shook it off.
Yeah.
But that is my kook of the week, dude, because who does that?
Is he a listener?
I hope so. I know exactly. I took a mental snapshot and I'm like...
This guy's living in your head rent-free. You know that, don't you?
I know. But honestly... I'm going to burn that fool next time I see him. I know what board he's riding.
Oh,
I know the shaper personally. I wanted to do some background research, but I didn't. But no, anytime he's out there, me and anybody I know out there, free pass to burn that fool.
All right. Fair enough. Well, that's a good
good story.
A great story. I loved it.
I love your outro song ended 3 minutes ago.
It did. We've gotten into Pearl Jam, Soldier of Love. Solid. I think there's a Beatles song called 909 or something. I was trying to find it. Isn't there a Beatles song? Like,
I don't know it, if there is, and they can't be referencing the Inland Empire.
It doesn't matter. It's here it is, one after the 909.
What are they referencing?
Let's see if we can play it. Here it goes. One after
Is that like a jetliner or something?
I don't know. It's I'm not sure what it is. It's just called One After
909.
One After 909.
Well, this is dedicated to my kook of the week. You know who you are.
There you go. The One After 909. I guess that ends our show.
Sounds good, man. Follow me, David, on social media at Surf Splendor. And then the website with all of these video links and everything we talked about in the show is surfsplendorpodcast.com.
And you can follow the same information that I just basically take right off of David's website and put onto my website. Down the line, what is it? Do you know what is it?
Down the line radio.
Yeah, downthelineradio.com. Thanks.
Good job, Scott. Way to self-promote.
Hey. How is the traffic going? Have you noticed like people listening to the show?
More and more every single, like I just looked at April's stats.
Yeah.
More downloads in April than there were in March, and there was more in March than there was in February.
Cool.
So no, it's growing for sure.
And we should give a shout out to our host here at the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center broadcast studio. Surfing Heritage in San Clemente. Do yourself a favor, come by the Surfing Heritage and check it out. Become a member. When you walk in the door, you'll be able to become an annual member and walk around the museum, check it out, take it all in. The Surfing Heritage and Culture Center in San Clemente.
Awesome.
All right, until next time, adios and aloha.
Europe, you'll get down. You're never running from this town.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Thank you, Scott Bass, for co-hosting. And thank you to Surfing Heritage and Culture Center in San Clemente for allowing us to use your space as our studio. If you listen to this show in iTunes or Stitcher, please rate and review the show. That helps others to find it. And feel free to visit our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com, where you can find all the additional media that goes with today's show, things that we discussed, videos, photos, that sort of stuff, all on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And there's also a comment section, so chime in, you know, share your thoughts on the show or your opinion about something that Scott and I discussed. And then also make sure to follow us on social media at Surf Splendor on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we will keep you updated throughout the week with various happenings and goings on. So thanks for doing that. We appreciate you listening, sharing the show, and doing all that you do to help keep Surf Splendor growing. And I will be back with an all-new episode next week. So until then, this is your host, David Scales, saying thank you for listening, and aloha. And everyone thinks we're trouble.